You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean Johnson.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show.
Well, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us. Bing is for doing, and we are here doing another AfterBuzz TV after show for Downton Abbey Season 3, Episode 4. I'm John Comerford, and I'm joined in the studio by my lovely co-host, Tamara Berg.
Hi, everybody. Sniffle.
And Alina Akram.
Hey, everyone.
And, of course, helping us out in the booth is Marissa Serafini. Thank you, Marissa.
Hello.
Okay, you know, usually I start off with some interesting or hopefully a funny little quip, and I don't know, I can't do that. I'm still reeling. We've just seen this episode, and we're still kind of, well, I know you guys were devastated. I'm still,
yeah, you guys, you know, you'll have to excuse me. I have to say, this is one of my favorite episodes that we've had, and wow, my most hated episode so far.
Okay, well, so we've run the gamut.
I thought it was done incredibly well. I felt that the obviously the storyline of Sybil dying in childbirth.
Oops, spoiler alert!
Spoiling it at all.
We assume you've already seen the show, so.
And was just devastating, just devastating. I mean, I cried for a good half of the episode because you can just feel the pain of everybody involved. It's just so sad.
Yeah, you know, just really. I mean, when you want a good emotional, heart wrenching thing, this really provided that,
yeah.
And you know, it was very well done. And I don't even know what to say about that part of it because you know, some people talk about it how you know every once in a while it dips into melodrama. I don't care. It does it well.
It does it so well. It was just heartbreaking. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, sometimes you see things coming. I didn't see this coming until way late.
No.
And which is great because I like to be surprised because usually I'm ahead and this time I wasn't.
Yeah, you usually ruin it. You usually turn to me and go, oh my God, she's going to die.
Oh no.
And you didn't in this.
Yeah,
we
were
both taken by surprise.
And I think it was just because I wasn't trying to be ahead. I wasn't involved in it so much. And then it starts
happening.
That's
because you trust their storytelling on this show.
Not,
because the writing is so good. Yeah. All done by Julian Fellowes.
Of course. So, yeah, I'm still reeling from it. And, okay. We got to get into this because, again, I thought it was great to bring in the other doctor, the Sir Philip Tapso.
Yeah, it was done really well. So,
and you could have those arguments because who else are you going to have those arguments with to really set the drama and the conflict of it all? You've got to bring in that other outside person who is of an authority, who is of the more of an aristocratic level than, of course, Dr. Clarkson is, who's much more middle class in that sense. So you still got those two things happening, which is perfect for Branson because here he is going, which way am I going to go? Do I believe in this aristocracy or this person who I can't stand where they come from? Or do I believe in who's still, you know,
who's very pedigreed and all of that?
Exactly.
Has
and
the
even
letters
though,
behind his
even
name,
though he didn't grow up in the same class as Dr. Clarkson, he's certainly more familiar with her. And he's saying, you know, so I mean, just great conflict all around, well set up. And I love the arguments too. I mean, and of course,
the arguments were excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, and here this person is, Sir Philip, who doesn't know anything about this family.
Pompous.
Yeah, and what is... And I just think it's weird that Lord Grantham brings him in merely because he has a pedigree.
He was so easy to dislike.
Yeah.
As soon as he walked in, pompous is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was...
But Lord Grantham brings him in because, well, you know, it's my daughter and I want her to have the best.
Well, because he thinks he's the best.
Well, I know, but that's the thing. It's like he's willing to, somebody who's raised, who's seen the family, who's raised his, well, has doctored his family, so to speak, from infancy.
Right.
Is not as important as a pedigree.
Yeah. However, he does mention that he has doubts about Dr. Clarkson because of Lavinia and mm-hmm. his misdiagnosis of Matthew.
Right.
So, I mean, that's his argument.
Yeah.
I agree that it had to do with the fact that Sir Philip has more of a title. And
yeah. Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, and a rational argument. I don't know if that's his own rationalization, but, you know, he obviously doesn't trust Clarkson for whatever reason. But I love that from the beginning, Cora was saying, well, I think you should be there, and subtly insists.
Yes.
But
yes.
Never demands. You
yes.
know, and she keeps the whole episode, that was every time Cora and Grantham, she was always just
the slow burn.
Exactly. You know, Dr. Clarkson wants to do the test on the albumin and
the urine.
Exactly.
Oh, good God. And Sir Philip, my mother is here.
Sir Philip objects, and then Cora says,
do the test.
Yes, insists that the nurse. And so I thought that was good. So you always had that going, that running theme through that.
But, right, again, laying the foundation for what's going to come later. And it just. Why don't we just go to it? So Dr. Clarkson is saying she might be toxemic. She might have eclampsia. She's confused. She's muddled. Mm-hmm. Her ankles are thick. And, you know. Yeah. She does not have thick ankles.
Yeah, no, it's a simple little thing. I just like that, you know, of course, the doctor who's known her forever
would know.
Yeah.
Right, right. So it's this battle of the doctors, and really it was a very equally measured argument on both sides when it came down to we should take her to the hospital and give her a cesarean section, which, you know,
open her to infection.
What 50 or 60 years before had an 85% mortality rate for the mother. Now I don't know the statistics for 1920, but it was still very, very risky.
Yeah,
and. You know, except that I loved Sir Philip's argument against cesarean section was because she was going to get a lot of germs in a public hospital.
Yeah, I know.
Because, you know, germs love public hospitals more than private hospitals.
Yeah. Well,
his rationale is they're not as clean in public hospitals, but still, I mean, that's just such a, you know, it's.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's the condition of the hospitals at the time. They probably weren't as concerned.
I just don't like that Sir Philip was bullying Dr. Clarkson into silence.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't even... He was trying to get him out of the room.
Yeah.
There's not enough room in here, and he's playing Lord Grantham. Dr. Clarkson is playing Cora.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not fair. At least let the guy give his input.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when he did, yes, there's a risk. You know, and Sir Philip says, see, finally, honestly.
Honesty, yeah. Rhetoric. He's been honest.
Like he's been lying. Yeah, no, exactly. Like Dr. Clarkson has been sitting there lying just so he can look.
But the one who hasn't been honest is Sir Philip.
I am quite, quite certain there is no risk here.
Yeah.
I want to know what's going to happen to Sir Philip from here on out.
I don't know. Well, who knows? His job is done, so to speak.
I don't think we'll see him.
No, I don't think we will either, but...
Do you think they'll bring him back for another pregnancy? I mean, if
But
over Cora's dead body.
Exactly. What would Lord Grantham do?
Yeah, do you think Grantham will even say anything to him?
No, because Grantham has nobody to blame but himself.
Yeah, and he obviously...
He's too busy blaming himself and mourning the loss
of
his baby.
Yeah, and clearly he's going that route because he does accept responsibility for some of it.
Well, what I didn't understand is that Dr. Clarkson was at least being honest. He wasn't swearing that she'd survive.
Right.
But Sir Philip is sitting there swearing...
No
in
risk
medicine,
at all.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee.
No
the only time that he backs off from that certainty... was when she's actually in the throes of seizing with eclampsia, and he says, well, you know, the human body is, and you can't be... And that's the only time when it's already past the point.
How about the doctors just standing in the corner while that's happening?
You know, that was weird.
I
wrote that down. Why are they way in the back?
And why aren't they comforting her? I mean, wouldn't you think that they're the professionals?
I think it's because it's absolutely... over. There's nothing they could do.
I agree with that part. I'm sure the reason why they did, there's nothing we can do. Obviously,
which is what Dr. Clarkson
said that at this point, there's nothing we can do.
Right.
But you're right. I was like, wow, how strange. I even wrote that down. I go, why are they so far away and not doing anything?
It bothered me.
Yeah. I mean, it was just strange.
I know. I expected them to give her injection. Well, one of them said, can't you give her epinephrine or morphine or something like that? And that's when Clarkson said, there's absolutely nothing we can do.
And I just thought it was strange. And maybe that's how it was done back then. Like, well,
or Dr. Clarkson was over it and he's like, let her die now. I tried to tell you so.
I don't find her to be that callous, but maybe.
Yeah.
So, but at least he came forward to try to help. Not help, but I mean to check.
Well, he checked her pulse.
Yeah, and what else could he have done? Well, seriously, what else could Clarkson have done?
Nothing. Yeah. She warned them.
Given her some chapstick. Nothing. There's nothing he could have done.
Okay.
And I don't want to bring it up either because we're going to... But like that scene...
Let's talk about
the scene. Absolutely.
I mean, I didn't expect that. I actually read a spoiler while I was searching for season three after watching all of season two within two weeks. Don't ask. But but point is that I read that, and so I was expecting it this season. However, like this.
You didn't know it was this episode.
I didn't know it was this episode. I didn't know how, because as soon as I saw Sybil's death, I closed the browser and I stopped reading. But well, I didn't expect it like this, and it was still really, really, really hard to watch.
You know, Cora, through the whole thing, that the moment before before the baby's born, and she says, Thomas is going, what do we do? And Cora said, I would have taken her to the hospital an hour ago.
Yeah.
The fierceness with which she said that was, exactly, Mama Bear. And it was so, you know, the intensity.
Yeah.
And then watching her face as Sybil is seizing and dying was, makes me choke up right now. It was there really isn't anything else to say but heartbreak.
I really got caught up in it. And I thought the scene we were talking about, it was shot so well and interesting and so different from how it's normally shot. I know we're going to talk about, but I just think we should just get into
this
now.
All right, fine, talk about it.
Well, I want to. We can talk about the rest later, but
okay.
This scene in particular, it was so many different angles they were shooting, almost all in close up. I mean, they had a few wides just to the, but also quick cuts. I mean, they really built the tension and the energy and the frenetic quality to
yes.
it was that, and then to have it just fall to pieces in
yes.
front of you.
Well, Tom saying, "Breathe, love. Please don't leave me. It's me. Please breathe."
Yeah, and then cutting and every just how many different cuts and give everybody's reaction. So you knew what everybody was in terms of their reaction, their emotion to the scene.
Yeah.
And
it felt like Mary was defeated.
Oh yeah.
You know,
because
she was just standing aside and talk about helpless. There was absolutely nothing.
Oh,
she
the way
could
she
do.
Backed off.
Mm-hmm. But then you know who surprised me in that scene was Matthew.
Yeah.
He was kind of, you know, a little, he was a secondary view in each of the shots
angles
that they took of him, but he looked as devastated as anybody in that room. And that really got to me. His reaction and Cora's reactions and Tom were the three that just
the thing that just
were so painful.
Took it over the top for me, that final shot of Sybil as she's passed away, and then her the paleness and the
power just
of
blue,
her.
Yeah,
it's just like, wow. I mean, I don't know if they shot that was makeup or, you know, just lighting or whatever, but I didn't care.
I was shocked
so
that
definite.
They were showing the seizing and all of that going on. I thought they were going to make it a clean death or since I was kind of expecting it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought they'd go into the room and she had fallen asleep, you know, passed away
and
in her sleep.
The other thing
but
I thought
when
was
I
interesting
saw the
about
seizing,
that.
Ugh.
Was that, you know, they did it in the beginning. They were all talking about don't say albumin,
urine.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't talk about the womb.
And Lord Grantham doesn't like to talk about these scientific matters or whatever it is that Cora said in the beginning. They all were saying, you know, setting all this up like this is something we don't talk about. Not only Lord Grantham, but it's just we don't talk about these things. And then they're all just there. Instead of having it happen in the middle of the night, they are forced to have to deal with this kind of thing right in front of their eyes.
Up close. And I also thought, interesting, no one looked away.
No.
Yeah.
You know, because I was sitting there kind of watching Ethel and Mary.
Yeah.
I mean, Edith, rather, and Mary kind of going, you know, they're horrified. It's their sister dying. And you know, women of that time would be more delicate in a certain sense might not watch, but they both watched as the entire thing was happening in front of them. And I just thought that was, again, interesting character choices.
Yep. And then, what was I going to say about that? Oh, lost it.
I'm sorry.
So sad.
Yeah.
And then Lord Grantham, you were certain. He says it right there in the room, but you were certain. You were certain. Okay. Because that's what he was hanging his hat on.
Yeah,
was everything
isn't a certainty better than a doubt?
Right.
Or whatever that line is he said the other time.
But this just can't be. She's 24 years old.
That's when you could just see how devastating it was when she's only 20. Because these things don't happen to 24-year-olds.
And women don't die in childbirth anymore, kind of. But, you know, but they do.
Yeah.
Interesting, Matthew. In this day and age.
Exactly.
I thought it was even more sad to see the servants going through.
Yes, let's go downstairs.
Interesting. The reactions.
Their reactions put me over the
top. Especially Thomas's.
Too.
You know, I mean, because he had just got through talking to Jimmy about her. I'm sorry, James.
Yeah.
Because this is before Sybil was, but this is when they actually had the baby.
Right.
And he says, "Oh, do you know her?" And he says, "Yes, of course. We work together. She's great. And I know her better than anybody else. And, you know, and she's a wonderful person, all that kind of stuff. And just like you." But I thought from that, and I think he really did care for her. I mean, you got to see a side of Thomas which you have not seen.
Never seen before.
That's why it's gut-wrenching, because yeah. someone who's so heartless yeah. and cold.
Right.
Like, really mourning her.
And the way he said it, you know, there are very few people. Did he say if there's very been, few people have ever been nice to me? And
not many have been kind to me, and she was one of the few.
She was one of the few. And I can, now that we know, we can see why there are so few people who are kind to him. Oops. And you just, I mean, my God, this guy can't catch a break. And now I'm feeling sympathy for him, and you see, oh,
damn it.
I mean, God, I know, it's just terrible. And then even Mrs. Hughes.
Mrs. Hughes, who is just such a wonderful character yeah. to begin with. And I've been a fan of hers from yeah, back when yeah. she was doing Lovejoy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she says, the sweetest spirit under this roof is gone.
Yeah.
And it's true. And she Carson. Was so lovable. Uh-huh. So, I don't know. Everybody's favorite daughter, I think.
No kidding. Well, I mean, even the daughters are... That's her favorite daughter.
Yeah,
you know
what right.
I mean? Because the way they... That scene together with them, the two of them,
oh, the
Mary
sisters,
and Edith.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the only person that ever thought we were so nice. We were nice people.
We were nice people.
And what that scene was... Oh, my God. That was like, would you please give us a break? You know, because even that was killing me.
Yeah. That was tough.
I mean, let's love each other as sisters should. And I'm just going,
this
and
is our
finally,
last time together yeah, as exactly. sisters.
And that was terribly sad, that line.
Yeah.
This is the last time the three of us will be together.
In this world.
I have two sisters.
Yeah, I know. Exactly so.
Oh, jeez, I'm crying again.
Yeah. But it was I go, oh my God. Never. And just when that, okay.
I'm poor Edith in my family,
yes,
just by the way.
Yes, of course. So, and then let's get more sad, because then you have Branson with her, and the way he is with her afterwards, and the air is taken out of him, and he's just kicked in the gut.
How about
and
when
then
she's.
Cora.
Yeah.
Right as she dies, you hear the baby cry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But then Cora.
The killer one is, yeah, Cora sitting and wonderfully
Cora.
Shot. So you see, obviously, Sybil in the foreground, then
yep.
Cora, and then behind Cora you see Mary. And I thought that was, you know, it's great staged, wonderfully blocked. And it's all on Cora's face, and she's just going
reassuring.
From, yeah, she's helping her yes. other daughter and not wanting to be devastated, you know, just for Mary's sake.
Right.
But you know, she's dying inside.
Of course.
And just holding it together.
And making her promises.
Yeah. Right, right.
Of taking care of
yeah,
baby
we'll
and Tom.
Of, take care of both.
And
that
this
was
is
hard.
The
okay, go ahead. Try to get breathe.
This is my chance to say goodbye to my baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then from there, she had a great episode, by the way.
Oh,
she's going
oh,
from
yeah,
all that
so
devastation.
Good.
You know, in the beginning, she has this insistence, this quiet way of
asserting herself.
Asserting herself because, you know, that's all she could do. And then this definitiveness, the whole thing about, I would have said it an hour ago, and the fact that she can't because it's not her decision. It's
not
the
place.
Mother's decision. It's the husband's decision. It's not even the master's or the house's decision. It's the husband's. And it was just so crazy, these rules and these roles. And I'm going, well, that's how they lived. So what
yeah.
are you going to do? But then to go from all of that, and then at the end, you could feel that fire again, how she's saying that I have to go write a letter to
well, ask
Dr.
your
Clarkson.
Father.
Oh, ask sure, ask your
ask
father,
your father
to
sleep in
the
dressing room tonight.
Yes.
But for me, is the fact that she was saying that I'm going to go apologize to Dr. Clarkson, or write a letter to Mr. Clarkson to apologize for our behavior. We didn't listen to him because Sir Philip and your father knew better, and now she's dead.
She's just pouring salt on the wound.
Ouch. Yeah, she's going to lash out at somebody.
Oh, like, she has a right to, though.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely,
because if they had listened. All right, so that was devastating. And then just because there wasn't enough devastation, the Dowager, when she comes in after it's all happened
right.
the next day, and she's talking to Carson.
That the acting was so powerful between the two of them.
Yeah.
There were so few words,
right.
And you know, we've so come to love everyone in these, you know, in
right.
these houses, and to see Carson and the Dowager, we've seen
yeah, these
what was
two
it? We've
old
seen,
war horses.
Exactly, we've
yeah,
seen some
we've
troubles.
Seen some
you
troubles,
and I,
you and
nothing
I, yeah.
worse than this.
And the way she walked away, I swear to God, she's walking away. She's got the cane. She has the cane, but she still uses the pillar to hold herself up because she's gonna fall. And then they show her walking away, and she's lifting the veil up. And I swear to God, it looked like she ages 10 years right now,
yes.
just in that walk.
Yes.
Well, just seeing her cry.
Yeah, it's brutal.
That hurts. Because, again, another cold,
yeah.
pretty emotionless character.
Right.
Well, she's got a lot
down.
Of spunk. Yeah, you know, things don't usually get to her as much, but, man, it's just...
sad. This was a sad episode.
Those two powerhouses, though, having that scene, yeah, when, and you know their history, and you know how connected how much, they were,
and how much they've been through.
To each other in a certain way, and connected to Sybil and connected to the family, and this massive history they have, and this devastation comes through, and here we are.
I mean, and you know how horrible it is, they always say, obviously, when a parent loses a child, but I can't even imagine the grandparent lose. I mean, because really, it's just not the natural way, because the grandparent should not live their grandchild.
No.
So, but
she's great grandma now.
Yes, she is great grandma now.
All right, we have to move on to something else, because we could keep talking about it, but is it going to, you know, I'm sure anybody listening is probably getting depressed too.
I know. So
before we go to our break, let's talk about Bates and Anna, because that was the only one bright spot in this particular episode.
Yeah, kind of. There was a baby.
There was a baby, that's true, but they didn't really spend a lot of time with that.
No, they didn't.
And it was always in the shadow of the tragedy, so. But the one bright spot, if we can call it that, is there's a possibility that Bates and Anna have come in onto some evidence that might free him. And, of course, Bates figures it out, which I thought was really interesting, but it's only because Anna did all that. Because
she was asking all those questions.
She played gumshoe.
It may come to nothing. She kept saying that. It may come to nothing, but one day something will, and today's the day.
Mm-hmm. And how about the look on her face when Lord Grantham says, you know, you always said there would be something, and you found it. You could see that pride in her. But it's a long shot. I mean, so, you know, the whole pastry under the fingernails or whatever it is that they found,
but then, you know, and she sees the Mr. Murray, the solicitor, right, which sad again. Sad.
there was anything not
Mr.
sad.
Mr. Murray arrives at the worst time of ever. But, you know, he says, okay, tell me the whole story, because this is the thing. We have proof of his innocence now. Let's get a move on. And then we go back to prison.
Yes.
And then those damn guards talking to that damn roommate, cellmate.
Why do they hate him so bad?
Because they're bad people. I mean, you know. And it's great conflict. We got to have something to do. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, it's going to be, you know, jail time.
It's going to be really boring in prison.
That's right. So.
Yeah.
I mean, but every time we think Bates, that's why I don't find this so positive, because as soon as they showed the cellmate and the guard talking about, oh, that's the lawyer visiting him, I knew it. It's not going to happen.
No, it's got to be the end, because they can't keep going back to the prison, because what happens, we'll
start. It's bad TV.
It's bad TV.
I'm over it.
We're going to get over it. I'm going to go, okay, get him out of the prison. We're sick and tired of it. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. So.
And we need some good news
this
episode.
And this is the light at the end of the tunnel. For that particular storyline, I mean, you know, Bates is going to get out at some point. It's got to happen.
Yeah, he will. Yeah, he
and
will.
He's got to get back to Downton, because we want him. He and Anne have got to get.
So is he going to replace Tom then?
Well, that'll be a good question. We'll have to find that out. My guess is he would have his job back. There's no way that Lord Grantham wouldn't give Bates his job back after he was wrongly imprisoned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Handsome Jimmy or Alfred.
Yep, Handsome Jimmy might be out.
Somebody.
Jimmy might want to
leave. That's true. But if Matthew's taken over, you know, the finances of Down, that might be okay. They might, you know, with Lord Grantham and his mismanagement, then yeah, they'd probably have to cut a few people. But
how about that? I feel like Mary tries to be assertive.
Right.
But, well, she doesn't try. She's quite assertive, where Cora does it with decorum.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And, you know, she's very polite about it and respectful towards her husband, well, for the most part, until she's past that point. But Mary is ruthless.
No,
the way she ripped Matthew apart when he was talking to Mr. Murray.
Yeah.
Do you think that's realistic back then? I don't.
Well,
it seems like it is.
It seems like it would be. But she still was not. These days, she would have, you know, she probably would have chewed him a whole new one, but she was still.
You think?
Right, but I mean,
She never called him any names or anything. She just said, this isn't the right time to do this. So there was still a little bit of decorum there.
I feel like she belittled him in front of Mr. Murray.
Yeah, but I think she started belittling them both.
Sure.
Yeah, she went after
both. Well, that's true. She was an equal opportunity.
She did not single him out from the herd and say,
totally,
I'm going to get you, boy.
Castrated Mr. Murray.
Exactly.
Too.
She got them both. So.
Well, but I mean, you think about, you know, we talk about the 1950s housewives in America and how they had, you know, a very much a second class citizen status. In 1920 England can't have been even as good as 1950s America.
Sure.
So that's just to validate your point.
But here's the thing that, you know, bugged me about that scene is, why didn't I, you know, Matthew, what? Look.
Stop talking.
No, not that.
No?
I'm going,
He apologized. Well,
there's nothing wrong. Look, I understand he's up there, but he's here now. I don't know when we're going to talk to the... It's not like we call on the phone all the time or you can get somebody by email. He even said, I don't know the next time you're going to be up here. It's a horrible time. All he had to do is say, look, I know this. It's a horrible time. I don't know it, and we have to do something. If I don't help Downton, it doesn't... This whole place is falling apart.
And Sybil will still be dead.
Exactly.
I completely agree with you.
I understand the timing of it. They both are right. But the fact that he didn't say anything just drove me nuts.
Well, the fact that he apologized after he got chewed out for something that was...
And you know, there's going to be plenty of people to think, no, he was wrong for doing it. It's the wrong time. And that argument absolutely can be made.
It can be made, but like you said, it's not exactly convenient to call Mr. Murray over and have him come discuss those matters. And,
right.
Especially if Downton is in such dire trouble.
It's not like they weren't going to include Lord Grantham. It's just that, look, we can't talk to him now. We don't want to. But here's what I'm thinking. Get your head on it. Then when we get back together, all three of us...
Sometimes timing is bad. Yeah. And you just have to still do things. Yeah.
She's kind of hypocritical because one second she's encouraging him to stand
she's
up
pushing
to
him like crazy to do
and,
it.
You know, you're the master of this estate now.
You're co-med. You got to get in there. You got to do it. Yeah.
But then when he tries...
I think really the only thing that we can say is she was being irrational because
and
she
emotional.
Was...
Well, obviously. And again, I don't fault her for that because I understand it. Her sister just died. Her father's upstairs, despondent. Yeah. Of course, and she should do exactly what she should. But I just don't think Matthew should have just put his tail between his legs and taken on. I think he should have said something.
Yeah, agreed.
And you know, consoled her as well. I don't think he should have been cold about it. But I think. No. You know, okay, that's all I wanted to say about that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so we started off talking about Anne and Bates.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, did we finish with that?
Yes, and let's finish with prison. Darn it.
Let's get out of prison.
We're done with the prison.
Before we move on, we want to thank all of those of you who have been downloading on iTunes and been telling a friend. We appreciate that so much. That's the thing that keeps us going. What do we got here, Marissa? We got about 20 million downloads a week now?
Yep.
20 million. 20 so, million. Over 3 million. 3 million a day.
A day.
Right? Yeah. Okay, and it's all because of you for your commenting and your rating. And please tell a friend. That's all we ask so we can keep this going and keep bringing this to you. And what else?
Commenting really helps us out. Yes. When you do, please do take a minute to rate and comment on iTunes and you know, let us know what you're thinking. I did get a tweet from a viewer listener today a couple hours ago who must be on the East Coast feed because he got it while we were watching saying, you know, I can't believe what happened on Downton Abbey. Was this the spoiler you were holding on to? Because remember I talked last week about accidentally reading a UK newspaper, and I'm sorry to say no, this isn't the spoiler.
There's a bigger spoiler ahead.
Yeah, there is.
Who was it, by the way?
I should mention.
So while she's looking
Derek Dick.
Thank you, Derek.
So thank you for tweeting me, and I appreciate it. You can tweet me if anybody else wants to at Tamara Berg, just so that you can find
us. All right, so let's move on to other topics that weren't so wrenching. We'll talk about Ethel.
Ethel,
there was a little bit of comedy with the Ethel thing because you know, of course, Isabel offers her a position, or at least a temporary position. Say, if you work here, then you can get a reference, and obviously, references back in those days, it was all about the reference because you couldn't make a living without it.
No, not at all. Well, I was just talking about how we were mentioning earlier in the day that Isabel is really the only, you know, truly kind, compassionate character in this show.
Well,
except for maybe Sybil.
Maybe a few.
Well, no, there are a few, but of the quote upper class, I mean, she's obviously doctor's wife, so she's more middle class than aristocracy, but she's always trying to help other people, and
she really does always come from compassion. She's putting herself in other people's shoes all the time, and how kind of her to do this.
Stray dogs, and she helps stray dogs, and women who have gone to walk a path of ill repute. And so she offers her a position, and of course, Mrs. Bird will have nothing to do with this. Again, we talked about this.
Oh, good God, I can't be associated with such a woman. She says
she can't bear to lose her good name.
Yes,
no,
because that's all she has. But because she doesn't have much. But the best line was when she says, someone might confuse me with her.
I know. Oh, that was great.
And Isabel says, I think anyone look at you and I don't think anybody would make a mistake.
That was funny.
But with... She did it with such perfect delivery that you didn't even realize she just slammed. Hang on one second. What just happened?
Servant slam. So it was nice. But then, of course, when Ethel has to try to cook a kidney souffle. A kidney souffle sounds disgusting.
Yay, kidney souffle.
I'm sure it's delicious for all those foodies out there.
Says the vegetarian.
Yes, exactly. But of course, burns it to smithereens, and then she makes the tea later with the honey in it. So they, you know, they were trying to do what they could to, you know, elevate the humor in here to help us out, to give us a
little
respite.
Levity. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, oh my god, but it was funny, I have to say.
But you know what I thought was cool was Mrs. Bird played her hand.
Yeah,
I can't. You know, I can't do this. I don't think she expected Isabel to say
no. Absolutely not.
You know, good luck to you.
Yeah, she says, yeah, okay, you'll get a month's wages.
Her face was just like, what?
But she wasn't, yeah, that was great. But then she, Mrs. Bird didn't want to have the last, she did want to have the last word, but she wrote it down for Mr. Molesley to talk to Carson about it. There's a letter there, so that whole thing started going. I thought, again, Mrs. Hughes comes to her defense, Ethel's defense, to say, hey, look, she's had a rough time. Here, you know, so we see all these little competing ideas of, oh, it's horrible, no one should ever be in that house with her, you know, no maids was going there, and no footmen either. So all that stuff. But here we have somebody saying, look, you know, yes, she had a rough past, but we're trying to make it better. And I'm going, why is that so hard? But, you know, so it's the time. It's
propriety.
The
era.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes Isabel and Mrs. Hughes so amazing, because beyond their compassion, they don't care what anybody else thinks.
Yeah. You're right.
They're willing to put themselves out there and really help this girl or try to.
But Mr. Carson, the traditionalist, of course, because it's, and not because the kindness or her generosity, it's just because of what it's going to do to the Downton, to the Grantham
because
name.
Because that's what he is all about. It's all about tradition.
He's defending his territory, which is not only his territory, but his duty. Do that. So
you said duty.
I did say duty.
The line that I love from Carson was, "Well, I didn't think she was running a brothel in Mrs. Crawley's kitchen." In that booming voice of his,
mellifluous.
Oh,
yes. All right.
So that was that one I enjoyed.
All right, we already talked a little bit about Thomas and O'Brien, but you know what I thought was great is they moved that storyline with just a look. There was when they're all eating downstairs, they're eating around the table, and Thomas and James
Jimmy?
Just have this little exchange,
And
you see O'Brien just notice it, and you can see her scheming right then.
Yes,
she just that look on her face. She sees what's going on there, and she goes, a chink in the armor,
right? Yes. A little thing I can capitalize on.
You see the scheming start, and the first thing she's laying it out there, just moving, prodding, just giving a little nudge to James to go, get friendly with Thomas, because hey, if anybody knows that clocks, it's him.
Right.
And then you see that wasn't uncomfortable.
Oh, that was
Clocks. Is that a little weird?
Yeah.
That was a little skeevy, wasn't it?
I think that was their point in it.
Yeah, it was great. It was wonderfully skeevy. It's just like you're spending a little too much time behind him.
Poor Jimmy. He's already uncomfortable and
I know. And then what was it happened later? Oh yeah, Jimmy wanted to put a stop to it, and O'Brien says, if you want your walking papers, go ahead. So you just keep on moving it down the road, just kicking the can a little bit.
Yep.
So we know what's going to happen now. So we know what O'Brien's decided to do to get back to
Thomas. She's going to create something between the two of them.
Yeah. And it looks like if Jimmy or James gets put in the position where that is way more awkward than he's ready, but it looks like it's going to...
I think he may walk and her plan's going to fail.
Oh, interesting.
Because he won't be able to handle it. I don't know. So this is just a little prediction.
Okay, all right.
Getting ahead of myself.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I don't know if there's anything else. I mean, were there any storylines that we wanted to cover? Any other? I mean, we could talk. You want to talk a little bit more about the cinematography on this one?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
You know, we talked about the death scene and the way that was shot to create tension and
the frenetic pace.
And then, you know, the pacing of the scene that we already talked about with the Dowager and Carson was so slow.
Yeah.
And so
weighty.
Quiet.
Yeah. And
just, you know, be with this moment. Uh-huh. I thought was really, really incredible.
Speaking to that, when they showed her walking, I think they really allowed all that to sink in. I think that's why they took the time. I felt the weight of it on her.
Mm-hmm.
I felt the weight of it on me as I was watching it. And because they took their time to do that, you could allow that moment to happen.
Mm-hmm. A couple of shots I wanted to talk about was the one with the funeral car arriving.
No, I think that was the lawyer's car.
No.
It was the funeral car because it didn't look like a funeral car. Didn't look like you could put a body in the back of that thing. I didn't think it was looking.
Well, moments later was when Mary was saying my sister's body.
This is
just
right
left
after
the
she
house.
Dies. It's the next morning, and we're open up on the car coming in. To me, I thought it was lawyers because they cut to the lawyer, right? But it doesn't matter.
Maybe it could have been
because it's a shot,
right? Exactly, the shot of this, you know, this huge house that's supposed to be, you know, a stand
where it's all safe
for exactly
nothing
for,
can ever touch you behind these walls, you know,
and then. It's that small little thing coming in, and things are changing.
Yeah, yeah.
Another shot that I thought that we were all really affected by was the closing shot, which was
Branson.
Tom standing with the baby in the window.
And the jib up. Yeah.
So painful.
Yeah.
Because you're just, it was just a beautiful shot, though.
Yeah, it was just it was gorgeous.
Because it conveyed so much. I
and then
I
the gloom
that.
Surrounding the house.
Also, the shot of the servants downstairs when they discovered
that
Sybil was dead. You know,
that silence and that just.
And Anna standing there just sort of clutching her heart. And the looks on all of their
Tom's
faces.
Face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just, there was so much. I think I said in the open that this was one of my favorite episodes because I just thought it was done so well, beginning to end.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a moment to breathe as much as we wanted one from time to time.
Well, certainly, and emotionally, this was the most.
It was hard
wrenching,
to watch,
as you've said a few times. All right, so I think that covers that. We have only a couple of small bits of news, so we'll get to
After
that.
Buzz TV
and gossip.
News.
All right, so Alina,
I just read a quick
spoiler alert in case you have if you haven't seen the SAG Awards.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Not the one I'm talking about.
If you don't want to know the results of the SAG Awards,
turn it down for 10
give
seconds.
Give us 10 seconds. Ready, Alina, and go.
Quick tweet from People Magazine. Mm-hmm. Downton Abbey won as an ensemble cast, and they beat out Homeland and
Mad Men. There you go.
So they won the SAG. Yay! Excellent.
Okay, so your thoughts. You agree, disagree?
I love Homeland, and I love Mad Men, but right now I'm just engrossed with Downton Abbey, so I'm really happy for them. And I know both shows have won so many, so it's Downton's turn.
What do you think?
I think that's an incredibly hard choice to make, you know, because I haven't watched the second season of Homeland, but I watched all of the first season and thought it was excellent. I've not seen really more than a couple of episodes of Mad Men, but so my knowledgeable comparison would be between Downton and Homeland, and I find it hard to figure out which would be the winner. What do you
I'm agreeing with it. I'll tell you what. Homeland, and I do that show. I love that show. We do it here.
Great show.
It is a great show. But in terms of ensemble acting, Homeland, they spent it's an ensemble cast, but they spent a hell of a lot of time with their two leads.
You're right. Yeah. That's
so
true.
And I'm not saying it's not an ensemble. I'm just saying because of that, I think this is a more even, and they have so many storylines with so many different characters.
Yeah.
With backstories, and they're fully fleshed out for the most part. That's why I'll give the nod to
that's
this.
A really good episode.
Mad Men is close to. I mean, I could have seen it going either way, but I think that it's a fair award. I think it's a just award. I'm glad they got it.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that was it for our news. Now here's our gossip. A little bit of a blowback here. I mean, many people already know this, but we haven't talked about it on the show, so we're going to talk about it now. A lot of people have been talking about how. Well, as if in some way Downton Abbey has some glamorized the Edwardian age or something like that, or not really been a more even-handed about the bad things that happened out of the aristocracy,
right.
et cetera.
Right.
In fact, Benedict Cumberbatch, who's a British actor, for those of you who don't know, I'm sure most of you do, he was in War Horse. He plays the lead in Sherlock
He's
Holmes.
He's in The Hobbit
the
as
Hobbit
well.
Hobbit as well. Mm-hmm. And the lead in the Sherlock Holmes series that's done in England. I don't know. Yep. What's that?
He's not in The Hobbit.
He's not?
The guy who plays Watson.
No, we know that, but I think he has a role in it.
The Hobbit.
He has a role in it. He doesn't play the lead.
He's the necromancer.
So, there you go.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so he's in it.
Voice.
So, there you go.
Three Hobbit movies, in fact, Marissa. So
okay. Proven wrong.
So, anyway.
Only because I have IMDb in front of me.
in speaking of... Downton Abbey. He called the first season, what is it?
No, he called the show general.
All right, well, effing atrocious.
Effing atrocious, but he filled in the word.
Yes, he did, so in a very British way.
Yes.
With his nice accent. So, which I thought was interesting, but the question is, because he's now in another a new series that's also based in the Edwardian era, and named, I think it's Parade's End. Which is an apt title as well, because Parade's come to an end.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's saying that theirs is so much more authentic, I guess. I'm not exactly sure why.
It was something like that. And but you know, one of the things I think he was saying was that that in the way they're portraying the upstairs and downstairs of Downton Abbey is that it's kind of a cliche. Haven't we seen it a zillion times? Well, you know what? Yeah,
maybe.
And people love it.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Yeah. It's good TV.
It is good TV.
And then we've had
articles
and people saying how, especially in America, we're supposed to be an egalitarian society.
Yeah.
We threw over this aristocracy and this kingdom and royalty and stuff like that. And how can we
glamorize
and you know, be so enamored of this and be romanticizing it and stuff like that? And I'm going, what? It's a TV show. Why are you taking that so...
Right. It's storytelling.
Yeah.
We want to watch storytelling and we want to see lives that are not our own, which is, again, part of the reason why it's so interesting to Americans, because we don't have that kind of aristocracy, we didn't really at the time. We also don't have the servant class the way
not
they do.
I mean, we obviously have our own, because as egalitarian as we are, we're not. Whatever class you're born into, for the most part,
determines how your life is going to go.
For the most part.
There's no question about that.
But we are still fascinated by the time period and just the way, just like I'm fascinated by Justified when I'm in the haulers.
Yes.
I don't know that world either. I want to know about it. I'm fascinated by it, but which is a weird juxtaposition, going from the haulers of Justified.
I think perhaps Benedict Cumberbatch has a vested interest in criticizing a show of the similar time.
Yeah, he might be drumming up press for his own show.
And I'll be interested in if it comes on American TV. I'll be interested in watching it to see what he's talking about.
For no other reason, exactly. I want to see the difference between the way Julian Fellowes has done it and the way these creators are doing it.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
So. And then we'll really talk about it. We'll see which one we like better. But I'm just fascinated by the fact that there's blowback, is that they're taking it so seriously. I don't think, and this is what I pose to you, my esteemed panel. Do you think it glamorizes the aristocracy?
Yes,
I do.
You do.
But I don't think there's a problem with that.
Okay.
And I don't either, because I love the show. I realize what it is. It's a TV show. I don't sit here and think that every servant or every home had such amazing servants that love their, for the most part, love their, you know, the people who...
They served.
They served.
Right.
But it makes for good TV, like Tamara said.
Yeah. I don't know that I agree that it glamorizes, because I never think the show is trying to say that, aren't these people better than those people?
That's not what... Right.
Okay, are you seeing it?
I see it as, look how nice and wonderful the Granthams are. Uh-huh. They're helping these servants. They're giving them jobs. And as it's a theme in the show.
Yep.
It's our duty.
No, I agree.
But inherent
in that idea is... That we are better than them. That they need our help. But in that time, they did, because that was their system.
Right. Right. And
what are you gonna do?
I think the assertion is that they are aristocrats at the expense of the common people.
And the argument is better to be made.
Keep going.
No, but I mean,
that's it. That's exactly what I was going to.
That's what people are mad at. I think.
Right. But you know. It's history. It happened.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's like saying, okay, well, then we shouldn't have a movie about slavery, because in any movie will glamorize it or something. I don't quite understand the argument.
It's when the slaves love their masters.
Right.
I see. All right. But
we have the best masters. Why would we ever want our freedom?
But I don't think.
Yeah,
see, I don't know that I agree with the premise, because I don't really see these servants loving these masters. Even Mrs. Hughes says, I don't like them like you do.
Right.
I don't. You know.
Yeah, but we don't see a lot of them trying to get jobs. Like the first season, I forget her name, the girl who wanted to become the secretary.
Oh, right.
They're all complacent and happy to be serving.
Right.
And have a job.
Well, and I think to a certain degree, they, you know, it was very hard to break out of that class then.
Yeah.
So,
well, certainly Branson. Branson's a great example. He never thought any of them were any good.
Right.
He thought the whole thing. He wanted to blow up the whole thing.
And now he's one of them.
Yeah, exactly, which is great. Yeah. But I do wonder where that voice, now that he's not there in that capacity, so to speak. He is a little bit still, obviously, but he's obviously in conflict because he's now in the middle. But where is that voice where his was? One, somebody else in their servant classes hating this and wanting the whole thing to be blown up and stuff like that.
Well, I think, can we go into predictions?
Sure, yeah.
Let's talk about predictions. I think that...
And now, your AfterBuzz TV prediction.
So Tom is now a widower.
Yes.
With a child.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so he's sure as hell not going back to Dublin.
Why? Why not?
Because he can't handle having that baby all by himself.
Why? I mean, don't you, I mean, I'm just asking because in his mind, don't you think he would?
Because there's no such thing as working single dads in 1920.
But what I'm saying is, if I had a child, wouldn't I want to go back to my homeland where I might know people who might help me?
Sure. What? Without his baby is what he would have to do. He couldn't go with his baby.
Well, they would never let him leave with the child.
And it's a moot point anyway because he can't go back to Ireland because if he does, he'll be arrested.
But
if that's off the table, wouldn't he want to go back to family who might be able to help him with raise the child?
No. Okay. I don't think so.
But they would
that
never say it.
What's that?
She said the Granthams wouldn't allow it, and I said, I don't know if they'd ever say it.
No, they would have a certain amount of say
sure.
in it, but, and, you know, like we talked about last week with Lord Grantham, you know, perhaps doing a little, that he was pulling strings to get his way, but what would Tom do with that baby? It's not like he could stay home and hang out with his baby. He'd have to get a job.
Right, I know.
And, he's a working class guy. To find someone to take care of his baby, I think he would, here's my point, I think he would realize that he is not giving his child the kind of opportunities that he could get if he stayed
like
at Downton and... Yes.
I agree.
Thank you.
I agree completely. Oh, shoot, hit the table. But I also think, you know, the way that we've seen Tom and the way that painted him is... His sense of right and wrong would say that, yeah, I do want to give my child as much as I could, but I don't agree with this way of life.
But
I would be putting my child in the very thing that I've been fighting against.
He's not fighting anymore, though.
He's still wearing
the dinner coat talking about it.
Yeah, but he also is going to have the kid christened in Catholic.
I think he may fight it to an extent, but he's going to drop that fight.
Yeah.
I think
he's no longer.
So he's no longer a man of principle.
There's no winning for him. It's like, I agree with Tamara. What's he going to do? Hire a maid?
I think he's going to find it in an untenable situation. Yeah.
My point was that I would think, obviously they're going to keep him at Downton because it's more interesting to keep him there than to send him to Ireland because we're not going
to
have a
chance. To make a freedom fighter out
exactly.
of his baby.
But no, just for the sake of argument, what I was thinking is that he seems to be the kind of guy who would want to go back to his homeland where his family is. So you say find a maid. No, he's not going to find a maid. He's going to find his mother, his sister, or somebody to help raise the child in the way he was raised because that's what he agrees with. That's a lifestyle he wants.
Yeah, but that's not realistic for him anymore anyways because he's in danger there.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I know. As I said, it was just for argument's
sake. He may move to Liverpool and leave baby Sybil.
Do you really think she'd leave the kid behind?
Yeah. Really? As a father, it'll be even easier than Ethel.
I don't think he's going to leave home. I don't think he's going to leave the kid.
I don't think so either. I think everybody's just going to get ensconced in Downton.
Exactly. They got to keep him enmeshed.
Yeah. I also predict Bates is getting out one of these days very soon.
It better be soon. Because Alina, what do you say about
I'm over it.
There you go. All right, Alina, let them know where they can find you.
It's @_Alina23 on Twitter.
You can find me @TamaraBerg, TamaraBerg on Twitter. I read my tweets. Also, my website is TamaraCentral.com.
And where can they find you on TV?
Oh, on Home and Family on the Hallmark Channel, doing some crazy crafting.
On the Hallmark Channel. Marissa, you want to talk to them? Tell them where they can find you?
They can find me at Serafini TV.
And where else? At AfterBuzz on what other shows?
I also do Once Upon a Time in Glee.
There you go, Once Upon a Time in Glee.
All right, and you, John, are also on Justified.
Oh, that's right, Justified, so pay attention to that.
See you Tuesday on Justified.
All right, on behalf of the panel here, we want to thank you very much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
Yes, we will.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later, cup of tea.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.